Now you know.
Hello?
Jason Colavito.
This is he.
Hey, Daniel Lott from the Edge Television Broadcast.
How are you?
Well, I'm outstanding tonight. We've been having a real riot here on the pre-show, expecting to get you on the line, and I have ordered the Edge viewers and listeners to ask you the most challenging questions you have ever been asked in your entire life, and even if your pre-life, if you so have believed in that as well.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. Welcome to the program, Jason. I don't know if you've ever watched it. Here's how the show rolls. We have a live chat going on, and the viewers there, I think mainly viewers and the listeners, I don't know how many of them go to the live chat, but they post questions in there. So we'll take questions from that, and then there's a fast blast link where they click a button, and it sends a question right here to the studio. So we try to infuse the listeners and the viewers with the program via their questions. And we ask them to make those succinct so that we can get them to you. And then about 9 o'clock, we have about a 5 to 7 minute break. So right off, Jason, what we want to do, because I have never interviewed, and this show's been going since 2004. I started right after Art Bell got booted off of Coast. I guess it was sort of a protest show, and then all of a sudden it just kept going and never stopped. I don't know what the problem was. I guess I'm a glutton for punishment. But what is a xenoarchaeologist? I think we can ascertain what skeptical means, but can you put them together and describe exactly what that is?
Well, skeptical xenoarchaeologist is actually not a term I came up with myself. It was actually bestowed on me by a journalist who was describing some of my work. It comes from the idea of xenoarchaeology referring to the archaeology of extraterrestrials, whether that be the ruins of alien cities on other planets or alien ruins somewhere here on Earth, the idea that you're looking for evidence of extraterrestrials, and the skeptical part means that you're pretty sure that it's going to take a lot of evidence to convince you that said ruins are actually built by extraterrestrial beings.
When you talk about archaeologists, I guess, is that more in the literary research tense, or is it physical archaeology? What type?
Well, skeptical xenoarchaeology, something like ancient astronaut theorist, is a completely made-up term that simply describes the kind of end product that I produce, which is to say that I do a lot of writing and research about topics related to ancient history, to archaeology, to mythology, and I look at the claims for extraterrestrial influence on Earth from a skeptical perspective.
Mm-hmm. And how long have you been doing this?
Well, it depends on how you classify it, but I've had a website devoted to skeptical looks at claims for unusual interpretations of ancient history since 2001. I wrote my first book on the subject in 2005, and I've been running my regular blog about it since 2011, give or take.
Okay. Now, during the time from when you intently focused on this area, have you remained as skeptical as you were in the beginning, or are you less skeptical?
What I think you're getting at is what kind of story led me to where I am today. And as I talk about in my first book, The Cult of Alien Gods, I wasn't always a skeptical xenoarchaeologist. When I was a kid, I discovered the works of Erich von Däniken, and I was 13 at the time, I was really impressed by his books of ancient mysteries, and I read as many of them as possible and went to garage sales to get more moldering yellowed paperback copies of his books and those of his colleagues from the 1970s, and I read them with glee, thinking that I had discovered an amazing ancient mystery. Mm-hmm. But over time, I became progressively more skeptical, not only because of in the 1990s, Graham Hancock's reinvention of the ancient mysteries genre as not extraterrestrial, but as a sort of pseudo-Atlantis, but later because I discovered that a lot of the underpinnings of these books, they just didn't hold up to scrutiny. And in college, I started doing some research into the academics who had studied and restudied some of the claims that von Däniken, especially Robert Temple, had made. And one by one, the claims for these things, they just fell apart as I continued to research and found that the things that these authors were saying just didn't hold up in the face of facts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I would say that you would represent maybe a group of people that exists that doesn't take the research element to the length that you do, that hear about, say, UFO events, and when they do, they laugh or scoff. And then, of course, there are those that are quasi-believers in that in that segment of thought or visionary, you know, whatever, you know, the event. And then there are those that are completely sold out to us that here they are, and I've been telling you for years. And so, well, you're being a skeptic as such, then I think you may represent a huge faction of people, so that you would be speaking to them tonight, and they would be saying, I'm glad somebody's getting to the bottom of this whole fraud thing. And of course, then the others would say, you're probably veering, you know, you don't have enough information to make a good decision. And then there are those that said, I've seen them, and therefore you can't tell me otherwise. So I see sort of three categories there. But let's talk about the one that would be diametrically opposed to you. That is those that are sold out, say, to the existence of aliens. And those including those that have seen them, and you must know, and I didn't look it up before the show, maybe you have that information, but a huge and growing number of people believe in the existence of aliens. So, and it's almost sort of like the legalization of marijuana. Or even the legalization of gay marriage for that matter. There is a tide that's turning, almost what's an unstoppable tide, toward the belief that there is in fact aliens, and everybody's waiting for disclosure. You're putting a stopper there and saying, wait a minute, not so fast. So do you feel that tide and pressure to come on the other side, or do you feel so strongly that there's mass delusion going over there, and you're trying to be the doctor here to say, hold on, people?
Well, I think that you've actually put together two slightly different questions. The first question is, do aliens exist? Now, that's a scientific question. And you'll find many scientists who are very confident that somewhere in the universe, yes, there is extraterrestrial life, including intelligent extraterrestrial life. Given the sheer number of planets in the universe, it is, according to many scientists, almost a certainty. So in that sense, it's not really a question of belief in the sense of faith. Do you think that aliens really exist? But more of a scientific probability that, yes, there are aliens somewhere in the universe. But the question you're really getting at is the question of whether aliens have visited the Earth and are currently visiting the Earth, and whether there is evidence for it. Now, if you're asking me, do I believe in aliens, you're asking a question essentially of faith. Are you saying that you have this emotional idea that, yes, I believe in aliens, or an emotional reaction, no, that's impossible, they can't be? And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I fall on either pole of that, because what I'm asking is the question of whether there is evidence that these aliens have been here, particularly in my area of interest, in the ancient past. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that so far, in all of the research that I have done, and all of the texts that I have read, and all of the sites that I have researched, I can't find any evidence to say that these aliens ever visited in the ancient past. Is that to say that it's impossible? No, of course not. Mm-hmm. Anything is, to some degree, possible. The mm-hmm. great scientist Carl Sagan explored the idea of whether ancient aliens could have visited the Earth. But, like me, he eventually concluded that the evidence just isn't there for it. So it's not really a question of saying, no, this is impossible, how stupid of you to believe it. Mm-hmm. It's a question of saying, do we have the evidence to justify believing it, mm-hmm. and to justify changing our policies, changing our archaeological digs, changing our textbooks to reflect mm-hmm. this belief? Right. And so far as I can find, the evidence for that is no. Mm-hmm.
Are you aware of giant skeletons being found all out through the world?
I'm aware of claims for giant skeletons being found all over the world, mm-hmm. but so far no one has actually brought a giant skeleton to a public venue where it could be examined and tested. Mm-hmm. There are people who have said that they've had these, but so far the bones just aren't there. In one, in
so do you default?
Go ahead,
Jason. Do you, when you see a story that comes out, and I would say that mainly it's in the alternative media, but occasionally it surfaces to a Yahoo or some other national thing. But are you saying that when a picture of a giant skeleton is posted with an archaeologist there, do you default to say that's Photoshop?
Well, you're saying that am I prejudging a case before any evidence has been presented? And no, I'm not prejudging anything. But the more I look into each of these specific claims, the more the details start to fall apart. For example, at Mystery Park, Eric von Däniken's theme park in Switzerland, it's now called Jungfrau Park, they have a large skeleton, supposedly. It's a statue that's, I think it's like 30 feet tall. Mm-hmm. And visitors to the park are told that this is based on bone fragments that were found somewhere in South America. And when you start looking into the story, the entire skeleton, for example, is reconstructed from very few small bone shards. And looking at the photographs of those bone shards, no, they're not photoshopped, mm-hmm. but the photographs of those bone shards show what look very much like the bones of an Ice Age mammal, probably like a ground sloth, a very large, almost human-like ground sloth. So the idea is that the more you look at the details, the more you're able to make a judgment. And in many cases, the photographs that are shown just have no details whatsoever, and you can't make a judgment.
Jason, do you apply that same view or method, I guess, of examining the evidence that you're presented with to evolutionists that take a fragment of a bone and create a humanoid from it?
To take a fragment of a bone and create a humanoid from it?
Yes, which they've done many times.
You mean the reconstruction of human ancestors?
Correct.
The question of whether evolutionary biologists are correct in the reconstruction of skeletons is one that is open to interpretation even within the scientific community. It's not as though you can take a single finger bone and say confidently what every other bone in the body looks like. Mm-hmm. There's probabilities that are involved because of the idea of how scientists have reconstructed the evolutionary tree, what they assume various members of the family would or would not look like based on how closely they're related and so on and so forth. But if you're saying, is anyone 100% confident that based on one finger bone we know exactly what shape the foot was? No, that's it's not something that's
so
possible,
then,
but it's well beyond my particular area of expertise since
what I said was then if we were to extrapolate information as you have done, say, with in this case we're using giants, use that same toward evolutionary processes, presentations of the evolution of man, in most cases they are fabricating a composite of even a face. I mean, I've seen them create, here's what this person would, you know, this Neanderthal would look like, but more than that, very small bone fragments, they produced entire humanoids. So I'm just saying, using the same method for the evolutionary process is the same that you would use. The skepticism should be applied in both the evolutionary presentation and evidence that's
I think you're confusing a bunch of different and related issues here. When you reconstruct the face of a Neanderthal, that's based on a more or less complete Neanderthal skull. And we can do that because we can also reconstruct the faces of human beings from their skulls. You've seen that on crime shows. You take the skull, you put the clay on based on average muscle depth for a human being, and you can reconstruct the face. And we know we can do that accurately because we can compare the reconstructed face from the skull to photographs of the person before death and can look at that and see, yes, that works. So therefore, we can feel with relative confidence that reconstructing the faces from older skulls is probably more or less accurate. Mm-hmm. Now, when you get to a different species, it may not be quite as accurate because we don't know for certain the exact muscle depth, but we have reasonable guesses involved. And in the case of a Neanderthal, you have the complete skull, so you can do that. You know where the nose and the eyes and everything are. What you're talking about is the idea that we can declare a new species based on a single small bone. Mm-hmm. And you're really asking me for opinions that are a bit beyond my training, since I am not an evolutionary biologist or an osteologist. But if you're trying to say that if we can reconstruct a human ancestor based on a finger bone, why can't we reconstruct a giant based on a kneecap? Well, the issue is, how do you know that that's a giant's kneecap? And as I've said, many of these so-called giant bones are actually, more often than not, the bones of Ice Age mammals. Famously, the kneecap of Ajax in ancient Greece, widely believed to have been the kneecap of a prehistoric elephant. The skeleton that was declared to be that of Polyphemus by Giovanni Boccaccio is almost certainly that of a prehistoric elephant. Here in the United States, actually right here where I am in Albany, back in the 18th century, a giant tooth was discovered and declared that of one of the giants from the Book of Genesis. And upon further examination, after science had discovered that there were prehistoric elephant species, such as the mastodon and the mammoth, here in North America, it was discovered that that tooth was, yes indeed, that of one of these prehistoric elephant species. So, if you're saying, can we reconstruct a giant based on a single bone, the question is, how do you know that that's a giant bone?
Right. Right, that's all I'm saying. I'm saying that I'm going to apply the same method to the scientific community, that when they come out next time and say, here's a human to prove that here's the missing link, and it turns out to be a chicken that they put some feet on, I'm going to apply the same skepticism to that. All right, let's get to a couple questions here for you. This one's from Peter in Australia. What do you think about Chris White's documentary, Ancient Aliens Debunked?
Chris White's documentary, Ancient Aliens Debunked, does a very good job of going over many of the most important criticisms of the Ancient Aliens TV series, particularly their sloppy use of evidence and some cases of outright misinformation. On the other hand, Chris White's Ancient Aliens Debunked does have its own agenda. It does have an evangelical Christian agenda, especially at the end where it starts to talk about some of the, what I would say is less than evidentiary, less well evidenced claims for biblical events that he believes are the actual explanation for some of the ancient alien material. So it does a very good job of saying why ancient aliens is wrong, and perhaps a less good job of saying what we should think instead.
Mm-hmm. All right. And this question from Doc Warrior. Have you heard of the alien artifacts so-called discovered in the tomb in Russia?
In Russia, they have had many claims of ancient aliens and ancient alien artifacts over the years. I'm not sure exactly which one he's referring to. They tend to have these stories quite frequently, and so far not one of them has produced any scientifically testable results that have yielded evidence of extraterrestrials.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. In 100, I believe the last count I heard was 130 cultures around the world have documented what pretended to be a universal flood of the Earth. Do you believe that such a flood occurred?
Again, you're asking me for questions of belief, as though I'm just picking out opinions out of the air. Geological evidence that such a flood occurred? The answer is no.
Okay, there's no geological evidence. Okay, and to what extent did you research that to debunk that?
To what extent did I
research
it?
What is your evidence?
Well, one of the great things about science is that it doesn't come down to one individual's opinion. Scientists have been working on the question of whether the Great Flood occurred for more than 200 years, and almost universally for the past century, the answer to that has been no. Scientists have done enormous amounts of work on the geological history of the Earth, and there just isn't any evidence for a flood at all. Now, you can be like Giorgio Tsoukalos, who on In Search of Aliens last week claimed that the evidence for the Great Flood was the existence of seashells on the tops of mountains. But Leonardo da Vinci recognized that that was a very weak argument and that there were other explanations for it. And scientists who have done the work in geology and who have done very careful research for now centuries have concluded over time that there simply is no evidence that the Earth was ever covered in enormous amounts of water, nor that that water came from a vast sea beyond the sky, or from vast reserves under the Earth, or that all of the species died at once. So if you're asking a question of belief, I can't tell you what to believe. Mm-hmm. But if you're asking a question of evidence, the as far as science is concerned, there is no evidence for a great flood.
Hmm. Okay. So you went to various scientific journals and you researched their research on the evidence of a early Earth-wide flood, and from the data that you found. Now, that doesn't necessarily... Well, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but scientists don't universally agree on anything. For instance, there's a huge schism between those who believe in the global warming statements and those that don't. So I would assume then that there's also...
When you say there's a huge schism, you're talking about something like 99 on one side to 1 on the other. And
I'm not sure that's it. I don't think that's the percentage. But
well, are you referring to climate scientists or to all scientists?
Well, you know, a lot of climate scientists have switched sides in their belief that, in fact, global warming is not occurring.
Well, now that's a propaganda talking point that I've heard many times, but that just doesn't reflect the most recent polls of scientists. You know, it's hard to argue with belief again, but according to the data, which is to say the polls that have been conducted and the statements that have been signed by scientists, it's something along the lines of somewhere between 95 and 99 to 1 among qualified climate scientists who are in favor of some form of global warming. But now, again, we're getting well beyond my area of expertise, so I can't really sit here and say anything about global warming since that just isn't my area.
Okay, well, we are talking about myths, so I figured that fit right in there. All right, so let's go to another question, and it says, and I think they got this from maybe one of your books, and I'll bring the cover up here shortly. Do you think that Atlantis was only a literary work, or was it an actual place?
Well, it's a great thing to be able to promote my forthcoming book, which is actually going to be called The Foundations of Atlantis, Ancient Astronauts, and Alternative Histories. And it's going to be a collection of the texts on which stories like that of Atlantis are based. And in that book, I do collect much of the ancient evidence for Atlantis. And there simply isn't any evidence whatsoever that Atlantis was known or had any independent existence before Plato wrote it down in the 4th century B.C. Mm-hmm. If you want to say that, Atlantis had a reality beyond that of Plato, it's up to the claimant to show that anyone was aware that Atlantis existed before Plato wrote it down. And it would also be a good idea to try to explain then why we should trust Plato's account of Atlantis, but not, say, Euhemerus, who wrote about a century after Plato, who wrote of the lost continent of Pangaea, where similarly there was a utopian civilization ruled over by god kings. You know, there was more than one lost civilization in ancient literature, but only one of them has managed to capture the imagination. Mm-hmm. Now, why we should say one of them is true, but the others are not, you know, that's a question that the people who advocate the existence of Atlantis outside of literature need to address.
In your research of mythologies and ancient cultures, did you find any evidence that would lead a normal person to believe that the ancients had advanced technology?
Well, that again depends on what you define as advanced technology. Cicero wrote about Archimedes' amazing invention of a device that could predict the positions of the planets. And for a very long time, people who read that thought that he was making it up or that it wasn't quite as amazing as people thought. And then, in the early 20th century, from the Aegean Sea, found the Antikythera mechanism, the famous device often described as an ancient Greek computer. And lo and behold, this device did all of the same things that Cicero had attributed to Archimedes' magical planisphere. So when you talk about advanced technology, are you talking about technology that worked, or are you talking about technology that went into the science fiction realm of lasers and nuclear bombs and flying cars?
Well, let's go to flying vehicles. I choose door number one, flying vehicles. Is there any evidence of that?
Is there any evidence of it? Well, you have a bunch of texts that say that there were vehicles, usually chariots, that flew. Now, you can be like the ancient astronaut theorists and say that that represented airplanes or spaceships or something like that. Or you can take a mythological perspective and look at that as a development from a literary perspective, which is to say, in the case of the most famous of these flying chariots, that of the sun god, that in large measure this traces back to Indo-European mythology, where in the earliest layers of myth, the sun was depicted as a flaming wheel in the sky. And from the concept of a flaming wheel in the sky came the idea that it was a flaming chariot in the sky, and that the chariot was pulled by flaming horses. And now you have a flying chariot that goes across the sky, all based on the idea that the sun is a circle, and with the rays that come out of the sun, it resembled the spokes of a wagon wheel, so it had been likened to a wheel. Now that's how many mythologists look at the story. But if you're an ancient astronaut theorist, you say, well, if they said that it was a flying chariot, then it had to be a glowing spaceship. So what you're looking at is a question of interpretation. Now, which interpretation has more evidence to support it? The one that can draw on hundreds of years of research, the one that can draw on cross-cultural mythologies to show how parallel stories developed in slightly different ways over time, or is it the one that says, looks like, therefore is?
Sounds like a question from a question. All right, here's Doug White. He has a question for you. I got to start reframing the question and answer scenario that we normally do for you, Jason, so we can get on to the exact answer. Is there any evidence of a hollow Earth?
Is there any evidence of a hollow Earth?
Yes.
Well, if there was, I'm sure with all of the drilling and mining we've done over the years, we would have found it. So far, no.
Well, are you talking about partially hollow? Are you talking about three-quarter hollow? I mean... I think I'm getting this now. All right, here's another question. This is from the Baby Wolf in the UK. That's an Avatar name. Do you believe, and I don't, you got to defer to our listeners because this is sort of how they pose the questions, and I don't blame them, but so take it as you will. Do you believe that the planet was seeded from alien races, or I guess we would say, is there evidence that this planet was seeded from alien races?
Well, I guess that's the question of panspermia, which has had some scientific support from some rather famous scientists who proposed the idea that in the distant past, a comet, a meteor, or something struck the Earth and brought with it the building blocks of life that would later evolve into all of the species we know today. And what your listener is asking is, I suppose, whether there is any evidence that this panspermia occurred for a reason, that it was directed panspermia, to put it in scientific terms. And the answer to that would be, I don't think there's really any way to tell. Accidental or directed panspermia would leave just about the exact same evidence on the Earth. Mm-hmm. So to know the intention behind whether that meteor landed on the Earth would be rather difficult to determine. Mm-hmm. So far, the answer is no, there isn't any evidence. Mm-hmm. We don't have evidence specifically that panspermia did occur, and even if we did, it would be probably almost impossible mm-hmm. to determine whether it happened on purpose.
Mm-hmm. Jason, why do you think that so many people believe that ancient aliens visited the Earth? I mean, the History Channel made a career out of that. So, you know, I mean, there's a whole lot of people that are intrigued by that notion.
Well, the simple answer is that people believe in it because they heard about it through the media, and it served a particular need, if you want to get philosophical about it.
Well, let's
one
do.
Of what?
Let's get philosophical, Jason.
Well, okay then. Well, one of the issues is that the ancient astronaut theory sort of occupies this middle ground between science and superstition. On the one hand, it claims to be scientific. It's asking a scientific question. Did extraterrestrial beings come to the Earth in the ancient past? Were they responsible for creating humanity through genetic engineering? Did they build ancient structures? But on the other hand, the ancient astronaut theory is also very close to the religions that it intends to replace. It tells us that we can respect the ancient texts. We can believe in the stories of the Bible, the stories of Greek mythology, the stories of the Vedas, at a very literal level. These things actually happened. The ancients were telling the truth. It tells us that ancient religions at some level must be true because the stories they're based upon are true. So the ancient astronaut theory is sort of a modern compromise between the materialism of science and the mythology of traditional religion. And many people would argue that during the 20th century, one of the major social changes was the decline in organized religion. What you see is that the sort of middle ground of religion, the people who would go to church and had not the deepest, most conservative interpretations of faith, sort of drifted away from that. So you have the rise of evangelical Christianity and very conservative, fundamentalist, and literal interpretations on one hand, and the rise of secular individuals on the other. And among a certain set of secular individuals, you see the sort of longing to replace what was lost in the decline of religion. We see that also with the new atheists. Sam Harris, for example, has a new book out in which he's talking about how he has discovered that his own idiosyncratic form of Buddhism is actually the one true religion, and through transcendental meditation you can replace everything that was lost with when you stop believing in traditional religion. So this is a widespread idea that we find across the spectrum. We see it among the new atheists, we see it among evangelical Christians, and yes, we see it among ancient astronaut believers.
Yeah.
The idea that we're trying to re-enchant the world, to see the world through a sort of supernatural, magical lens, to find the core of faith, to reach out and touch the divine.
Mm-hmm.
And the ancient astronaut theory, in one sense, allows us to do that, especially in the form that you see on Ancient Aliens, the kind promoted by William Henry and David Wilcock, where the aliens are almost exactly the same as pagan gods or angels. They're transdimensional beings who pop in and out of this reality, who communicate with us psychically, and who will rapture us up to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was David Hatcher Childress who said that the aliens were going to take the souls of the good and take them out to, I think it was the Orion Nebula or something,
mm-hmm.
to live happily on another planet.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not talking anymore about nuts and bolts, ufology, and ancient astronauts.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about a replacement for religion.
Mm-hmm. Jason, in your study of the origins of myths and why people believe what they do, what is the biggest myth that you found perpetuated in the Bible?
The biggest myth in the Bible?
Yeah. I mean, after you studied it to find out where the people get their views, their supernatural views, or spiritual views. I'm sure you looked in that book.
Well, if you're asking me what the most influential is among ancient astronaut theorists and among those who believe in alternative histories, it has to be the passage in Genesis 6 about the giants, about the sons of God who came mm-hmm. unto the daughters of men and had children with them, and that there were giants in the earth in those days.
Mm-hmm.
That has launched more, I hesitate to use the term, it's launched more unusual, shall we say, ideas than any other verse in the entire Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Everything from people like L.A. Marzulli, who are trying to prove the literal existence of these Bible giants in order to prove that the sons of God and really did come down and Satan is planning to kill us all, to ancient astronaut theorists who say, well, the sons of God, they had to have been extraterrestrials, and the giants are alien hybrids, to people like Andrew Collins, who argue that this is actually the story of a secret cult of hidden knowledge, that the giants are really a cipher for a lost tribe that came out of the wilderness ages ago and formed the secret bloodline that rules the world, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, it's interesting you said that was the, in your view, the number one perpetuated myth formulated from the writings of the Bible. It was amazing that you didn't say Jesus, because it seems to me that whole swaths, vastly more than the ancient aliens, sons of God believers view. So then are you saying, are you giving credibility then, or less negativity to the actual reality that Jesus did exist?
Well, if you're asking if there was evidence that there was a historical Jesus, it's a widespread consensus among historians that there was a historical Jesus. Are you asking, was the historical Jesus the same as the character we read about in the Gospels? That's a completely different question. But I had assumed that when you said myth, you were referring to the context of alternative history and ancient astronauts and all of that, my area of expertise. You know, if you're talking about mythology in the sense of a culture's belief system, well, the whole Bible is then a mythology, just like any other set of religious beliefs. Are you asking me to pick apart what is true and what is embellished? I'm not quite sure what we're getting at.
Well, no. What I asked was your original answer was that you said the biggest myth perpetuated was that giants came from the sons of God that cohabited with the daughters of men. And I was just saying it, but in terms of world transformation and belief systems, I would say that, you know, from my view, it seems that that Jesus was who he said he was, the Son of God, has changed entire civilizations and had more effect than the cottage industry of those that believe in these watchers, so to speak, these sons of God.
Of course, but, you know, that's sort of the main thrust of the New Testament. It's, you know, I had assumed that you were referring to the myths that are recorded in the Bible, you know, like the stories of Samson and the story of Cain and Abel and so on, not the whole point of large chunks of the Bible. I'm afraid that I'm not quite following you. Mm-hmm. If you're asking, you know, about influence, the Bible as a whole has had enormous influence in changing the world, but so has the Quran, and so has the teachings of Buddha, and so on.
Well, on that thread, let's finish that and move on, because I've got a bunch of questions waiting for you. Which book do you think most positively affected the cultures of the earth? The Quran?
The cultures of the earth?
Yeah. Which one would you attribute as adding the most positive influence to mankind?
I am in no way qualified to evaluate that question. That's not something that I'd be able to say. That's a huge value judgment that depends entirely on what you think about. I'll put it to you this way. The values that are contained in books are only as good as the people who are using those values. The same book can have vastly different effects over time. The Christian Bible, the New Testament, for example, has been used as a justification for crusade and inquisition, but it was also used as a justification for overturning slavery. So when you say what's had a positive value, I don't have a way of evaluating all of the positives and negatives of every book. That's well beyond my area of expertise.
Let's go to a historical question then. Would you say it's a true or a false statement that the Bible has influenced the United States development and, in fact, has culminated into the fact that you and I can sit here and talk on the Internet and broadcast worldwide as a result of the the impetus that was sort of the foundation from that book.
You have a way of asking questions that have both yes and no answers simultaneously. If you're asking, did the Bible influence the American government, the answer is the Constitution has absolutely nothing to do with the Bible whatsoever. Are you asking, did Americans take influence from the Bible? Absolutely. Many, many Americans, including many in the early generations of the Republic, were religious people and took inspiration from the Bible. But if you're asking, is the American government founded on biblical principles for biblical purposes? Well, you might as well ask if the ancient aliens were involved, as Giorgio Tsoukalos did last night on In Search of Aliens.
Well, what I was asking, is there proof that the knowledge that came from that book influenced and created, was part influencing and created the freedoms that we have today?
I'm afraid I'm not really following the question. How would you see the...
Well, for instance, how about the Ten Commandments, okay? That was taken up as a belief from the early foundings of our nation. It was virtually in every courtroom across the country. We established a country based on laws, and laws had the value system that appears to have came mainly from the Bible. I'm just saying, do you see...
And which freedom do you see coming from the Ten Commandments?
Well, the freedom for you not to be murdered, because that is thou shalt not kill, is one of thou shalt not steal. So hopefully nobody's stealing your books, and you're getting paid for them,
and yet,
nobody's killing you.
The first commandment is that you should worship only one God, and our First Amendment says that you don't have to. So one of the questions would be, if the United States Constitution is based on the Ten Commandments, how is it that we left out so many of them?
Well, you're answering a question with a question. Well, I thought it was a simple thing, either yes or no, and that is...
It's not a simple question,
well,
because the Constitution has nothing to do with the Bible. But the people who wrote the Constitution were familiar with it. Hmm. The people who lived under it, and still live under it today, are extremely familiar with it.
Should they take...
So, yes, there's biblical influence in the people who are Americans, but American government itself, the Constitution... is not a biblical document.
So should we take out the part where it says we are endowed by our Creator? Would you be?
Not in the Constitution.
I didn't say
that's
it was.
That's in the Declaration of Independence, which does not have the force of law.
Okay, so would you favor taking that out?
It's the Declaration of Independence. And Jefferson wrote that as nature and nature's God, in the deity.
Do you believe in the church?
No.
Do you believe in the separation of church and state?
Yes.
That's not in the Constitution.
It is an interpretation of the Constitution.
That was in a letter written to the Danbury Baptist. It had nothing to do with the Constitution.
The First Amendment to the Constitution has been interpreted by the Supreme Court of the United States for a very long time as reaffirming the separation of church and state through the Establishment Clause. But we're getting into legal arguments here, and I'm not sure that that really has anything whatsoever to do with archaeology, ancient history, or extraterrestrials.
Well, it is historical. Tell you what, we're right at the top of the hour. Let's take a break, and then let's get back and get to some of these questions. I'll give you a few of them we want to get into the second hour. Where did the serpent worship originate? What's your thoughts about transhumanism? What about supernatural experiences? Would those be in your forte?
Sure.
All right, Jason, I'm going to bring up your website and put it in my background right now. Why don't you tell the folks what they can find if they go there?
If you go to my website, you'll find my blog, a listing of my books, and a library full of ancient texts and classic articles and fiction related to extraterrestrials, ancient astronauts, fringe history topics of all sorts. You'll find a wealth of resources related to all of my interests, ranging from ancient astronauts to Atlantis to horror fiction.
All right. All right, Jason, just stay on the Newsmaker line, and we'll bring you back here in about 5 minutes.
Sure.
All right, everybody, you're watching and or listening to the Edge Television Broadcast. My name is Daniel Ott. If you missed any of this exciting and intriguing first hour, you can go back to the edgeam.com website. It'll begin to replay in our main player, and then the high-definition video will be extracted into a pop-up player as well as uploaded to our YouTube channel, and you'll be able to hear Jason's interview on TuneIn.com, our radio program, playing 24 hours a day over there at TuneIn.com, which we'll play on any device that you have across any platform. Next week, we're going to have with us Richard Grund, kind of a good follow-up to this show, Supernatural Response Team. We'll be talking about where Supernatural originated in the second hour with Jason, our guest tonight. And then in 2 weeks, Bradley Dean, Sons of Liberty Radio, we will be with the program. If we haven't had a guest on the show you'd like to see, go to the EdgeAM.com website, click on the drop-down link that says Suggest a Guest. We're going to go to our about a five-minute break here. We're going to be right back. And welcome back to the Edge Television broadcast. On our newsmaker line tonight is Jason Colavito. If you've missed any of this exciting broadcast, go back to the Edge. It will begin to replay in the May player about 20 minutes after the show ends. And additionally, you can see it on our YouTube channel. Also, if you have podcasting software, those of you who have subscribed to the Edge, and that's a lot, well, you'll hear this broadcast. And you can listen to that anytime you want to after that. So if you don't have a podcasting software, just Google it and get it. It's automatically downloads the show. Remember, you cannot miss this show. All these shows are free for your reviewing or listening pleasure. Now let's go back to our newsmaker line and bring back Jason Colavito. Jason, you back with us?
Yes, I am.
Welcome back to the program. Jason, let's start off. The first hour we started off talking about what a xenoarchaeologist is. So let's just get into that and talk about how, in your research, where do people gravitate towards myths, and do they try to, is it because they don't really like the world that they're in, and they look for things in history and they see things that really aren't there? And when you discover, or say you research that same thing, do you feel like it's like a duty to tell them, say, look, that's really not a UFO there, it's really just they're drawing them? And do you feel compelled to do that, or what drives you?
Well, once again, you bombarded me with so many different questions. One of the questions that you asked was about mythology. And people look for answers. They want to know the reasons behind what they see, hear, and read. And in a world as complex as ours, where it becomes increasingly impossible for the individual to fully grasp almost any field of knowledge, there's just simply so much information and so much specialization that you can really be an expert in only a very, very small amount of it. It becomes difficult to find those answers. And because in today's world, many people have much less trust in the authorities and the elites than in times past, it becomes easy to say that scientists and academics and the government especially must be lying because they're untrustworthy. We know from all of the scandals that we've seen that these people just can't be trusted. So perhaps there is a simple, easy explanation that lies behind all of the seemingly random complexity of the world, something as simple as Atlantis or aliens, something that can be easily understood by the common man, something that would give the common person a sense of power and control again. And in that sense, mythology becomes an attractive substitute for the complexities and chaos of the modern world. So if you're asking whether people are looking for mythology, no, they're not specifically looking for stories that are unlikely to be true. Mm-hmm. What they're looking for are explanations, and for people that they feel they can trust to tell them the truth. And for many, the people they trust are the people they see on television and hear on shows like this one and read in books, who say things that, from my perspective, aren't supported by the evidence. Now you're asking what drives me? Well, frankly, this is a hobby of mine because I have always loved ancient history. But if you're asking, is it making me a ton of money and a famous celebrity like the ancient astronaut theorists? No, it's not. I have a regular job and do actual work during the day. This is something that I do because I have always loved ancient history, and it is difficult to watch people twist ancient texts particularly, especially those that I love, ancient texts that in many cases, some cases, I've actually translated myself and know better than they do, and to see them twist them into interpretations that just can't be supported based on the evidence. So I do feel compelled to tell people what I know about these topics in the hope that they would be able to evaluate the arguments and make a decision about whether the extreme claims are trustworthy.
Mm-hmm. There is evidence that there are gigantic structures all around the world, including pyramids underneath the ocean and including monoliths of multiple tons. Who do you think built those?
I think you would need to provide a little more proof that there are giant pyramids under the ocean. Is this one of those things that has been seen in those Google Earth artifacts?
Oh, no. Well, I saw it on, it was on Yahoo, and it showed this, what appeared to be some sort of glass structure, I think, is what it was.
Okay, so this gets back to that question of what is trustworthy. Mm-hmm. Now, would you change your entire belief system based on, well, I suppose you would change your entire belief system based on what you saw in a Yahoo article.
Okay.
No offense to Yahoo, but they were also running a trailer for Jim Maher's new documentary today that claims that President Obama is in league with space aliens to commit genocide to kill everyone. Mm-hmm. So it's not, you know,
what about the monoliths with right angles under the Sea of Japan?
You mean the Yamaguni formation? Well, I will quote to you Robert Schock, who is one of the most famous of the alternative, shall we say, geologists. He was the guy that said that the Sphinx was thousands of years older than Egyptologists think it is, and he says that the Yamaguni Monument is a completely natural formation. Rocks can and do cleave in straight lines because of the way the layers of rock were laid down millions of years ago.
Mm-hmm. All right, and then the pyramids, what's going on with them?
Well, they're still there, so far as I know.
Okay.
Can you be more specific?
Were they built by slaves, you think? Is there any evidence?
Were they
evidence?
Built by slaves?
Yes.
There's no evidence that they were built by slaves, but I assume you're meaning the Egyptian pyramids.
Mm-hmm.
And Egyptologists have found vast evidence for the workers' village in and around the pyramids, and they have fairly good evidence that the pyramids were built by Egyptians who were doing service to the pharaoh, not by slaves.
Mm-hmm.
Some believe that it might have been a sort of obligation of the Egyptian citizen to donate so much time to the pharaoh's construction project.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And the narrative about being built by slaves is largely a Judeo-Christian myth related to the idea that the Jews built the pyramids as Joseph's granaries and so on.
Hmm.
But that was a medieval story.
Oh, I thought mainstream archaeologists was trying to prove that they did it with ropes and slaves.
Now you got to ropes. You asked about slaves. I mean, it was a stereotype for a long time. The pyramids were built by slaves who hauled the blocks on ropes, but recent evidence has demonstrated that it wasn't slaves who built the pyramids.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any, there isn't any evidence that Stonehenge was a place of sacrifice or worship, but yet many claim that it was. Where do you think they get that?
Where do they get it?
Yeah.
They
get it from
older ideas that remain in circulation.
Mm-hmm.
The stories that have been told about Stonehenge for hundreds, in some cases thousands of years, continue on. And we have to remember that Stonehenge in particular is a site that is thousands of years old and has been used for many different purposes over the course of its lifetime. At some point, there might have been sacrificial rituals of some sort going on there, much later than during its heyday.
Mm-hmm.
And what you see is that old stories, particularly those of medieval and early modern provenance, continue on down to the present. They enter popular culture, and it's incredibly difficult to dislodge them. Stonehenge has a number of myths associated with it, that it was built by Merlin the Magician, who found a monument built by giants as a magic bathtub and flew it across to England using his magic wand and set it up in a day and a night. Another legend has the devil throwing up the stones in a single night.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you can't take everything at face value.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
There are a lot of contradictory stories, and they can't all be true.
I understand Obama went to Stonehenge, and he met with some druids, and I believe what he said was, you didn't build that. All right, here's a question for you. Do you think that transhumanism will replace the ancient astronaut theory as the next powerful religion?
Well, that presumes that the ancient astronaut theory is a powerful religion, and I don't think that's quite the case. We haven't yet had any people claiming ancient astronaut theorist on their driver's license the way they have Jedi and Pastafarian. So until that happens, I don't think we can quite call the ancient astronaut theory a powerful religion. And I have absolutely no idea what transhumanism is going to be doing in the future, so I can't really speculate on what's going to happen next.
All right. Vincent wants to know, which is a bigger historical conspiracy, the JFK assassination or the ancient alien theory?
Which is a bigger historical conspiracy? Well, I guess if you're ancient astronaut theorist Jim Mars, they're both the same conspiracy, aren't mm-hmm. they? Jim Mars believes that the ancient astronauts, in the form of David Icke's reptilians, are actually the secret force that was behind the JFK assassination and pretty much every government conspiracy for the last couple of hundred years. And, I will remind you, he also believes that they're coming to get us all. So,
aren't they?
I don't believe that there is good evidence that there was a JFK conspiracy. Mm-hmm. So I can't really say that the U.S. government was behind a conspiracy to cover up JFK in any way. Therefore, I guess that would by default mean ancient astronaut theory, but that's not really a conspiracy either so much as it is a very profitable publishing phenomenon.
Jason, a viewer wants to know, have you ever been to Stonehenge?
Have I? No, I have not had the honor of going to Stonehenge.
Okay.
I've been to America's Stonehenge, however.
Okay. There seems to be a rise in the interest and the experience people claim to have had with the supernatural, such as the ghost hunting shows and such.
Mm-hmm.
Again, is this people making stuff up, or is it Hollywood just presenting a fabrication to sell some products?
Well, what you see in the rise of the supernatural is a number of phenomena that converge to create this moment of supernatural excitement. People have always felt that they have seen ghosts. People have always felt that there have been demons and fairies and all sorts of supernatural creatures.
Mm-hmm.
In this particular time, you see the effect of media popularization. As the media talk more about the supernatural, more people are exposed to the idea, and more people begin to look for what they consider evidence of the supernatural. So, for example, a ghost hunting show shows up on TV, say 1.5 million people watch it, and some of them start thinking, wow, maybe that's an explanation for whatever unusual phenomenon they have experienced. Absent that show, they might have attributed it to something else. They might have considered it a leaking pipe. They might have thought it was the neighbor's dog. They might have thought that it was a demon. But if you see a ghost hunting show, it primes your mind, and you might decide to investigate through that route.
Mm-hmm.
And in turn, the more stories there are about the supernatural, the more it snowballs into a sort of shared mythology. Now, can I say definitively that there has never been a supernatural event? Of course not.
Mm-hmm.
Can I say that no one has yet found conclusive evidence that ghosts exist? Of course I can, because if they had, it would have been the top story on the news, and the Sci-Fi Channel wouldn't make you wait till the last 2 minutes of each episode for the reveal.
Mm-hmm. There have been plenty of closed-circuit TV tapes that seem to demonstrate there is ghost activities. Why?
What makes you think the ghosts are electromagnetic?
I didn't say they were.
Then how do they show up on tape?
Well, I would imagine it's not tape anyway. It's digital. That's not tape. So I was using it as just a reference point.
Yes, exactly. So what? By what method is the ghost producing some sort of visible light that would be captured by the camera?
Mm-hmm. Well, so you're saying that anything that's caught on tape is fabricated?
No, I'm saying that...
Doesn't everything
you're going to presume that it's a ghost, there has to be some kind of theory behind ghosts to explain why you want to interpret that evidence in that manner, as opposed to one of hundreds of other explanations that could be used to explain the same thing.
Mm-hmm. A lot of living things have a voltage or electromagnetic charge to them. Even humans,
right,
we produce a voltage. Why wouldn't a ghost?
Aren't living.
How do you know they're not living?
Then they wouldn't be ghosts as we have been defining them. So
there
I
could
suppose
be something
you're
else.
Trying to redefine ghosts now.
Mm-hmm. So if somebody has seen a ghost and you haven't seen it, then you would say that they... Your method of proof is you have to see it yourself, or can you take somebody's word for it? They saw it. Why wouldn't that prove that the ghost exists?
What is it that the person saw? I can think of at least a dozen different explanations off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
How would you pick and choose among them?
Mm-hmm.
How do you know that it's not a time traveler from the Orion Nebula who has shown up wearing the disguise of a long-dead relative in order to fool you?
Man,
how do
you
distinguish between
like
a ghost, the spirit of the soul, and that time-traveling alien?
I'm with you on that. I kind of like the time-traveler a little bit better.
Well, what I'm saying is you can't just say, all right, well, here's a phenomenon, we're going to call it a ghost, and we're going to now investigate it as an electromagnetic phenomenon because this is a spirit that is the soul of a dead person. You don't know any of that.
Mm-hmm.
The best you can say is somebody saw what they thought looked like X, Y, and Z.
So,
but you need more than that in order to come up with,
something
that will pass the tests of evidence.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there are many different ways of explaining what that is.
Mm-hmm. All right, so you're not against the fact that people are seeing supernatural experiences, and I would say that would just definition would be anything other than the five senses, but something appearing to our five senses that we can have a reference frame to. So you're not saying that those things aren't out there, but you're just saying which one of those supernatural events, whether it's a time traveler from the Orion the belt or it's a ghost, you're just using semantics there, aren't you? But you're saying that they could exist in either way.
I am saying that people sincerely believe that they have experienced these things.
Mm-hmm.
There are many different explanations that can be involved, some of which may be internal to the person.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it may not be something that is external in physical reality. It may be something that is internal to the person, a sensory interpretation, if you will.
What if multiple witnesses are experiencing the same interpretation?
Again, there are many different interpretations that are possible. There are many different explanations. It entirely depends on the exact circumstances of the particular case. When multiple people see something, there may be a physical reason for that. There may be something that they are seeing. It may be a shared delusion. Psychologists call it a folie à deux. But there are many different ways of understanding a particular report. To go from person said he saw something to therefore ghosts exist is to skip a whole lot of steps in between what the person said and how that represents actual reality outside of the subjective experience of the individual.
Mm-hmm. So, have you ever seen a ghost?
No.
Have you ever seen a UFO?
I saw what I thought was a UFO, yes.
Okay.
I was young, I saw a silvery saucer flying across the sky. It looked, for all the world, like a classic UFO.
Mm-hmm.
And then, turning away from the sun, it flapped its wings and flew away. It was a seagull. And when the seagull turns toward the sun, the silver and white of the seagull's feathers make a perfect illusion of a flying saucer. So, yes, I've seen something that looked like a UFO, and from my perspective, it was unidentified until I was able to figure out what the object actually was.
Mm-hmm. A couple of years ago in Stevensville, Texas, many various people from different parts of the county saw the exact same UFO, or what they described to be a UFO, a mile wide. These were people who were taken to illusionary events are attracting attention to themselves, how could they, not seeing each other, have the same illusion?
Since I'm not familiar with the details of the case, I couldn't possibly speculate about it.
There was in Chicago a few years back at the airport a object of some sort that punched a circular hole in the clouds, which pilots that saw that and people working on the tarmac all described the same event of a craft of some sort flying through the clouds. How could they be having the same illusionary experience?
Again, you're asking me to comment on things for which I don't have the information to evaluate.
Court of law, is not eyewitness proof of an existence?
Eyewitness testimony is among the worst possible proof. It's been demonstrated scientifically more than once that eyewitnesses are terrible at recollection and that they get many details very, very wrong. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's been a movement to try to discount eyewitness testimony in court cases simply because of the penchant for misidentifying suspects, because memory, especially of dramatic events that happen very quickly, is very poor.
Using the fact that we have capabilities to fabricate events, how can we prove that JFK existed? How do we know that, because nobody has seen him today, so how do we know that he ever existed?
Frankly, I don't know that you exist. As far as I can tell, you're just a flickering image on a computer monitor.
Exactly.
You might be a computer simulation for all I know.
And that's my point, that everything can be proven that does not exist. So it seems like we need
Gets us to the philosophical idea of solipsism. You can't prove that anything outside of yourself exists, therefore you must be God. It's a philosophical fallacy, and it is one of the questions that philosophers have dealt with for a very, very long time. How do you prove that anything outside of your own experience actually exists? And that's one of the reasons that science has a scientific method, to help try to get beyond the subjective, to try to find out what lies beyond our subjective experience of our senses. And there are limitations to what we are able to understand and perceive because of these limitations of our senses. But, I mean, you want to get into college freshman philosophizing, I suppose we can do that, but it won't be very productive.
No, let's continue with the questions. Tom Jones in the UK has his questions. This question for you. Do you think that the Philadelphia experiment was made up?
Was it completely made up? More or less. You'll find online, I believe Skeptical Inquirer has some very detailed discussions of the Philadelphia experiment and how that story was gradually created as a sort of modern myth through the accretion of various claims and counterclaims over the decades. So, yes, the story is not true.
Somebody made this quip here and said, if you watch the History Channel, and we've named numbers of things that would have appeared there, such as ancient monoliths, structures, and ancient aliens, so on. So do you look at the History Channel as the fantasy channel?
Well, it's certainly the imaginary History Channel. It has a lot of shows that are less than scientifically sound, from Ancient Aliens to America Unearthed to In Search of Aliens. It does, in fact, say quite a bit of things that we would not want in our history books, because we tell students, you know, you shouldn't use Wikipedia as a source, and you shouldn't use the History Channel as one either.
Betty in New Mexico wants to know, have you had any spiritual upbringing in your history?
Any spiritual upbringing in my history? Both of my grandmothers were very devout Catholics, and I did go to Catholic services when I was very young, but I do not, I don't have a particular spiritual experience. I don't, essentially, no.
All right. Is there any research you've done that proves that once you're dead that you just evaporate into nothing? Or because there's no proof that that's such a thing, that there may in fact be a place where somebody would go or their soul would go?
I research ancient history and ancient texts, so I really have absolutely nothing to say about the possibility of life after death. That is beyond my pay grade. That is a question that I suppose we will all find out the answer to much, much later in life.
Okay. Well, hopefully it won't be the version that says you have to accept Christ, because it could be a problem there. All right, let's go to this question here. Now, I had your book up here. This looks like an octopus, and I may be mispronouncing it. The Chulu? What is that book? It looks like an octopus.
Cthulhu in World Mythology? Yeah. Yes, those are octopus tentacles. Cthulhu in World Mythology is a parody book. It is a parody of ancient astronaut books. It is based on the works of H.P. Lovecraft, a horror writer who wrote an early version of the ancient astronaut theory in his famous short story, The Call of Cthulhu, which is about an octopus-headed alien that came to Earth millions of years ago, built ancient cities, and was worshipped as a god. The parody book is essentially a satire of Ancient Aliens and Eric von Däniken, looking at evidence from world mythology that this fictional character, Cthulhu, really existed. And I follow all of the rules of the ancient astronaut theory. Everything in the book, with the exception of the works of H.P. Lovecraft himself, is absolutely 100% true, and I twist and spin it into a historical fiction to make an entertaining but important point about how easy it is to take ancient texts and twist them to say things that they were never intended to say.
Mm-hmm. We had a guest on the program that, I'm not saying it's a myth, he just claims that that when you die, you turn into an octopus, and I guess that people have sex with them, I don't know. All right, here's a question for you. What do you think about the Baalbek stones, B-A-A-L-B-E-K stones? Do you have any information on those?
These stones, you're speaking, I presume, of the Trilithon, the three largest stones that form the base of the temple at Baalbek in Lebanon, the Temple of Jupiter. Those stones are, according to archaeology of Roman construction, they were taken from a nearby quarry and brought downhill to the site of Baalbek. They are among the largest stones ever moved in ancient times. Ancient astronaut theorists believe that they are too heavy for the Romans or anyone else to have moved. They also believe that they are much, much older than Roman times, based on some not particularly reliable evidence. The idea that these stones were related to extraterrestrials actually goes back to the Soviet Union. A Soviet scientist decided that these stones could only have been used as a launch pad for rockets, and therefore he associated the Trilithon with the ancient astronaut theory. The Soviets were very interested in the ancient astronaut theory in the 1950s and 1960s, to the point that the U.S. government became interested in why they were promoting this. The Soviets thought that by promoting the ancient astronaut theory, it would be a way to undercut the role of religion in the West by providing a scientific version of religion that explained religion's miracles as the work of aliens. So the Soviets produced all this ancient astronaut stuff and fed it to Western writers, particularly Jacques Bergier and Louis Pauls, who wrote Morning of the Magicians, the book that inspired Eric von Däniken, to Peter Colosimo, the communist writer in Italy, who wrote a series of ancient astronaut books. And you'll find in their books references to all sorts of Soviet stuff. And the U.S. government, now I've obtained the documents from the National Security Agency and the CIA, they were monitoring this, and they were sending back annotated reports to Washington saying, look at these articles that the Soviets are writing about ancient astronauts.
What do you think about the fact that they consider Western religious beliefs as a threat? So much so they had to fabricate this whole thing and undermine those beliefs. What is it in the religious aspect of it that they see as a threat?
You are aware that the Soviets were atheists, right?
I am aware.
By, defi- by definition, religion was a threat to official Soviet atheism.
Well, we need to.
They worked, for example, to suppress the Russian Orthodox Church during the time of the Soviet Union.
But today, of course, Vladimir Putin has put hundreds of millions of dollars to rebuild some of the churches there, so I don't know how much they are against it now. But what I'm saying is, why did they consider Western religious beliefs as a threat?
Because it was opposed to the official ideology of the communist Soviet Union. It wasn't because religion had some magical power. It was because it was a different source of authority that contradicted and opposed the Soviet Union. We saw in Poland at the end of the Cold War the power that the Catholic Church was able to muster, not because of special magical powers that suddenly made communism disappear, but because of the way that religion could create identification among people, form communities, and form an alternate source of authority to oppose the communist dictatorship. So it wasn't, you know, that's one of the main reasons. It's the same reason the Chinese government has been opposed to religion and still enacts strict controls on religious belief in China to this day.
It could have also been the reason that the Romans found Christianity such a threat is because it was undermining their authority and bringing in a new rule of law that didn't recognize Caesar's power. All right, here's a question for you. This is from Rick in Kentucky. Have you studied the Sumerian texts?
In the original Sumerian, unfortunately, I am not fluent in Sumerian. It's not one of the languages I know. I have read them in their English translation, and I do know scholars who can and do read them in the original.
All right. In your research, have you found any evidence that Hitler had anti-gravity technology?
That Hitler had anti-gravity technology? Well, I suppose if he had, we probably would have seen that. No, there is no evidence that Hitler had functioning anti-gravity technology.
Okay. Have you brushed upon the work of Professor John Mack in relation to alien abduction?
Yes.
And is he a fraud?
Is he a fraud? I can't say that he's a fraud. I can say that there is no evidence that people have been or are being abducted by extraterrestrials. That, again, would presume that there are extraterrestrials that are visiting the Earth and that they are interested in human beings. I have an article up on my website that might be of interest to people who are interested in alien abduction, looking in the history of extraterrestrial anal probing, which I found to be one of the less investigated sidelights of the abduction experience. It's an interesting read.
I imagine anal probing would be an interesting read. I certainly will leave that to the readers on that one there. All right, here's a question for you. If you gently tell somebody what they believe is false, what do you offer them to replace what they do believe?
That's asking quite a bit, isn't it? That's saying that there needs to be one illusion to replace another, or that people must have a belief system in order to maintain their soul and sanity in the face of the chaos of the world.
One could say it's your illusion replacing their illusion.
You're asking me if I'm telling them that they need a replacement belief system. And one of the benefits of being a skeptic is that you don't have to have an overarching belief system. You go where the evidence takes you. And I don't tell people that their belief systems are wrong. One of the things that I do is to show people how specific claims do or do not match the evidence. It's up to the individual who sees those claims, who uses those claims to generate from them a belief system. If I tell you that, no, the Mahabharata does not describe the fallout of nuclear weapons, and that David Childress made up the text that says that the hair and nails fell out because of nuclear radiation, cobbling it together from various passages, that isn't telling somebody that your entire belief system is false. But if that person then takes that information, and processes it and comes to a conclusion that a belief in ancient nuclear weapons can't be supported, well, mm-hmm. you know, that's something that the individual has to do. I can't tell someone what to believe. It's ancient astronaut theorists who tell you what to believe.
Wow. All right. This was pointed out here in our fast blast. It says, the Bolsheviks were the atheists, not the Russian people. They imposed their Antichrist communist rule on Russia.
Exactly. And that's what I was talking about the Soviets. I was referring to the Soviet government. They were the ones who sponsored this. And I should also mention that by the late 1960s, when the West suddenly adopted an ancient astronaut craze from the works of Eric von Däniken and others, the Soviets officially condemned the ancient astronaut theory. The Soviet Academy of Sciences said, this is ridiculous, there's no evidence for it, and suddenly posed as a scientific body that was decrying now the decadent West for its ridiculous claims about aliens.
Mm-hmm. All right. This is from Curious in the live chat. Do you have any info on the giant Olmec heads found around the world and why they were carved? Now, those things do exist, do they not, Jason?
Of course, the colossal heads of Olmec are Olmec heads. They are found only in the Olmec heartland in Mexico. These heads are very, very large, and they depict the Olmec rulers. The faces on them are very similar to the people who still live in the Oaxaca region of Mexico to this day. Those people are the long descendants of the Olmec themselves. And they maintain a very similar set of features to those carved on the Olmec heads. The Olmec heads have been, since the 19th century, accused of being carvings of Africans mm-hmm. because they bear a very superficial resemblance to stereotypes about West African people. But when you compare them to the actual residents of Oaxaca, the indigenous people there, they're a very good match.
Mm-hmm. All righty. Doc Warrior wants to know, what about zombies? Now, you know, I mean, even the United States government has something up on their website, how to protect oneself from zombies for whatever reason. Or that's the CDC, I think it was. Are we going to see a zombie invasion, or there's no evidence for that either, Jason?
Well, so far as science knows, the idea of a zombie is impossible because once the body starts to break down, it's not going anywhere.
Wait a minute. That can only be for the information that we know. What if that time traveler alien comes here and gives us technology to reanimate a carcass of a body?
We do that every single day.
You don't know that. We haven't reached it here. They're still perfecting it.
What do you think happens when you have your heart defibrillated? You're dead, you get zapped with electricity, and now you're the walking dead. Mm-hmm. What you're talking about, a specific zombie, is the idea of a rotting corpse that is reanimated without the breath of life, so to speak, and that's mm-hmm. a supernatural creature. I actually have an e-book that is for sale on my website about the history of zombies mm-hmm. and how the story of zombies is essentially the story of vampires, which is where the concept of the zombie originates. Mm-hmm. The zombie as we have it today is a knockoff of the original vampire before they became rich and famous.
Well, I think the vampires have become Muslim because I saw a YouTube video. They were like drinking the blood of rats and drinking the blood of the people they're cutting heads off. So I'm thinking, there's your real-life vampires right there.
I think that's a very insulting thing to say to Muslims around the world, and I can't let those remarks go unchallenged. That is a very, very rude thing to say about Muslims.
They're not. There are. You're saying that was a fake video?
No, you're saying that all Muslims are involved with blood rites.
Did I say all?
You're talking about ISIS Islamic extremists. That is not the same as the billion plus Muslims around the world.
No, I didn't say all. You put that in there.
Well, you just said Muslims. You didn't specify you're referring to ISIS.
A lot.
I mean, that's like saying that some guy who shoots up a bank happens to be a Christian, therefore Christians are bank robbers. I mean, mm-hmm. that's not the same thing.
Mm. Well, let's just hope that they quit drinking the blood of animals. Whoever is doing it over there, they are Muslim. It just so happens that all the blood drinkers are Muslim. That doesn't mean that all Muslims are blood drinkers. Agreed?
I'm not going to agree with your... I'm sorry, but that's just... You're very close to the old blood libel that used to be used in medieval anti-Semitic arguments. I mean, you're... Let's move on to something else.
All right, well, the zombie thing got us into that one. All righty. Now, here's... As we're getting near the end here, but I want to talk about the influence of Mars. It seems to be a lot of ancient astronaut theories that make that connection. There's a face on Mars, and you know that they say
there's not a face on Mars. People think there's a face on Mars.
It looks like one. And then there's those that say there are structures that appear in. How do we know that when those pictures are released, that they're not fabricated by the government, or that the real what's really up there has been airbrushed out, and so there's a lot more than what we think?
Well, I suppose it isn't possible to really know anything, is it? Eventually, it comes down to how are you... you're asking questions of epistemology, and you're asking how do we know what we know? And one of the questions is, who do you trust? And if you don't trust the government, then you're not going to trust their pictures, and no level of proof is going to be sufficient short of actually going to Mars yourself. Mm-hmm. But no one's stopping you from sending a satellite to go take your own photographs. Mm-hmm. And do you think that all of the different countries of the world are all conspiring together to hide these things from Mars? I mean, it's not like the U.S. is the only place that has ever sent a mission to Mars. Are other governments all supposed to be conspiring with one another?
Well, there is a lot of conspiracy out there, and I don't know about that. Hey, Baby Wolf in the U.K. wants to know, is there evidence, framing it your way, that we went to the moon?
Is there evidence that we went to the moon? Well, there's a famous experiment where you can shine a laser at the moon to have it reflect off of the mirror that the Apollo mission left up there. So, yes, there is evidence that can be verified. If you have a good enough telescope, you can go look up at the moon and see
what we left there. You think we'd be able to see the moon rover? Isn't that the vehicle still up there?
The stuff is still up there, yes.
How come I haven't seen a picture of the rover? I'd like to see that. That thing was pretty big. Seemed like it wouldn't take that much of a camera to see that.
I have no idea. I'm not an astronomer, so I don't know where exactly on the moon it is or how powerful a telescope you would need to see it.
Okay. Jason, as you looked at these myths and, as you say, unearthing the truth, knowing fear, science, knowledge, development of the horror game, as you sort of unravel in your mind that this isn't what people claim it to be, this history isn't what people say it was, these magical events aren't what they... In the end, what drives you as sort of a hope? Because it almost seems like that what people may get from you is that you don't believe in anything. And with that vacancy there, what's in there that holds you together?
I guess I don't quite understand the question. Are you saying that an individual needs to believe in things that aren't true in order to get through the day?
No, not say, no. In the totality of things, I think from the discussion we've had so far, virtually everything that people believe to have exist or exist has been wiped away as imaginary, is what I've been getting.
Or I believe in sunsets and forests.
Rainbows and butterflies?
Yes, in rainbows and butterflies, in the ability of human beings to see and do great things, the ability of art and literature to move us, in the great cathedrals of knowledge built slowly over time through the accumulation of research and ideas. Mm-hmm. I believe that people can and will continue to do great things, to find new things, to revolutionize our understanding of our place in the universe, of all that is seen and unseen. But we've been talking about negative things because we're talking about odd ideas that by definition lack support. If they had the support of science, we wouldn't be talking about them here. Mm. So it sounds negative, but only because we're talking about things that have long ago, in most cases, been debunked or consigned to the dustbin of history for lack of evidence.
Mm-hmm. Isn't science, though, the truth that comes from science is only the amount of truth that can be garnered by the amount of physical evidence or scientifically repeatable projects that they do, but is subject to change with advanced as technology advances. So how do you know what they currently say to be true is true, when it can certainly change when more information and more technology makes it obsolete?
Science does not say what is true. It talks about observations and creates theories from those observations that we believe are most likely to be true, and in some cases can be considered as good as true. Mm-hmm. But in any scientific endeavor, in any field, there is always the possibility that a new observation will create change.
I note the scientific community did not observe the Big Bang, yet they espouse that as a central truth to all being, living things, and everything that
we observe the results of the Big Bang, and based on those results, therefore conclude that the Big Bang happened.
But it's a myth. It's a myth until it's provable. It's not been proven. They weren't there to observe it. And there's no evidence that they have to say that happened.
You seem to be undermining the very idea of logic and reason, the very idea that you can take evidence and from evidence draw a conclusion. I mean, the way you're looking at this is a reductio ad absurdum. You're reducing the very concept of reason to the formula of I have to see it or it doesn't exist, which is what little children do.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I'm
and
doing,
that's not the way that science works in any endeavor. You don't see a vaccine working when you shoot it in your arm,
and you don't. But
you don't get sick.
Right.
You know, you don't actually see the virus not in enter your cell.
Mm-hmm. But you can see, say, if a ghost moves an object, that can be seen. So what I'm saying is, it seems like you're a little selective on who you give a pass for these belief systems, because the Big Bang is a belief and is not provable. It is as
what do you mean by provable? If you see the results, the Big Bang is a theory that is
a theory.
Explains
there's
evidence.
There's no evidence though.
It explains evidence.
Well, Jason, you're giving them a
pass. That we do observe.
You're counting.
And that evidence, the observation, can be projected back to conclude that the Big Bang happened because that evidence can't be explained any other way.
You're contradicting what you said in the first hour, that these are just theories and there's no evidence. You didn't go into the ground and find evidence of the Big Bang, but you're giving them a pass.
What do you call the background radiation of the universe? That is what the evidence for the Big Bang is based on.
How do you know that? Using your theory.
How do I know that? I can't personally know that because I am not the kind of, I'm not an astronomer. I don't have the expertise to conclude that, and neither do you.
But here's the thing. When you said that a ghost could be a time traveler, then a Big Bang is simply something made up. And as you say, they haven't looked at all the possibilities of what could have caused the creation of the universe. They used a single one without...
You are aware that there are multiple hypotheses about the origins of the universe. The Big Bang is currently the best supported of them, but there are others.
Okay, but none of them are
repeatable. So, you know, I'm not defending the Big Bang as a dogma. You asked why scientists believe that the Big Bang happened.
Mm-hmm.
And they believe that it happened because they can see the results that are predicted from what would have occurred had a Big Bang occurred. They look up in the sky and, oh yeah, there it is.
Mm-hmm.
That's good evidence that the Big Bang really happened. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, when you're talking about giants, you say, okay, well, if giants really live, what should we find? We should find the remains of the giant's habitation. Do we have that? No. We should find the skeletons of the giants. Do we have that? No. We should find the farms where they were growing all the food that they ate. Do we find any of that? No. And so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
We don't see the remains that we should see if the giant theory were true.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, when you propose the Big Bang theory, it makes a bunch of testable predictions. Do we see the background radiation? Yes.
But
do
the
we
background
see the galaxies
radiation
spinning away from one
you
another?
Can't, you,
yes.
can't, you can't not pinpoint the background radiation to a Big Bang. That is a theory, and the theory is conjecture. It's not provable. So, and your dismissal of ancient myths, this is a current myth that should be dismissed by the way that you examine the evidence of whether something was the way it was said and whether it wasn't.
But the Big Bang theory makes testable predictions. You then go and look for those predictions to see if they
if a ghost hunter went to a house
reality.
That, if a ghost hunter went to a house that is known to be haunted and there are is activity there that it was expected and provable, then that would
be... But you don't have a workable theory of ghosts. You presume the ghost
that,
based on...
But it's not theory.
You don't have
the ghost
a...
Are, if the,
what
if
is
the ghost
your theory
are acting, it's not theory. It's reality.
You're missing the point. With the Big Bang, the theory predicts, at a very basic level, all of the physical evidence that we should see. It has mathematical theories behind it that can be examined and...
But as you said,
on the other hand,
the
ghosts have no theory. What is a ghost? Define it at its most basic level.
Well, define
you can define the Big Bang theory. Define a ghost.
A ghost would be an apparition that appears to somebody that may or may not interact in our current realm.
And what is a ghost made out of?
Some say it's made out of ectoplasm. I don't know. They come and go. You haven't captured one.
But well, you see, you don't have a theory of ghosts, then.
Well, you don't have
all
to
you
have, a
have is a phenomenon.
You don't have to have a theory.
This is like saying you look up in the sky and see stars.
But that's a different
story. So we're now,
a
going, to predict, we're now going to have
no.
the idea that all stars are angels.
You're confusing theory with reality. You want a ghost theory. You want a ghost theory. Just
well,
like a Big Bang theory.
You said you were talking about Big Bang theory.
You
so
want,
of course
you want a ghost theory, and I want a Big Bang theory.
You want a parallel argument. Otherwise, you're comparing completely unlike things.
That's kind of fun, ain't it? Hey, Jason, listen, man. This is just getting good, too. We're getting near the end of the show here, and I'm not just cutting you off because we're having fun here, but it's been a really good time with you. I got your website in the background. Once again, tell the folks about it. I've had your books, various books on the background, too. So tell folks what they can get in your website.
My website, jasoncalavillo.com. There you can find listings for all of my books. You can find my blog where I update every day with the latest news about ancient astronauts, alternative histories, and other related topics. I also have a large library of ancient texts, horror stories, science fiction, and other related topics dealing with ancient astronauts, Atlantis, alternative histories, and so on. It's a great resource for anyone who is interested in any of the topics that we've discussed tonight, so feel free to check it out. You can also sign up for my newsletter, and my email address is on there if you'd like to contact me, probably to yell at me about all the things you disagree with.
All right. And it's all right to disagree. And we'll walk away, friends. Jason, I appreciate you coming on the show tonight.
It was a pleasure.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Stay away from that Big Bang. All right, everybody, the predictions, I kept them on the program until the end of the show, which is awesome. It's a skill level that you have to develop. Next week, who are you going to have, Daniel? I'll tell you who we're going to have. Richard Grund. We're going to talk about the supernatural response team. Well, we're going to find out, is the supernatural, is it out there? I don't know what is out there now. I guess nothing's out there. I don't even know if I'm real. I guess I'm not even here. That's a lot of fun. Glad to have an opposing viewpoint on the program here. That's all part of the edge. We've got a big round table here, and I know it's a little hard for some of us out there, but we've got to get through it. Because last week, you know, I mean, one group of you thoroughly enjoyed what you heard, and, you know, so many people, you know, everybody has their likes and dislikes. But what we want to do is pose the questions that get to the truth. And you guys can help me do that every Saturday night here on the Edge Television broadcast. Great to have you with us, and... Well, that's about a wrap. I feel like I'm supposed to do something else. I'm not making crank up phone calls because, you know, this is a real show. Well, maybe it's not. How do you know that I'm even here? I think I'm actually flying around a spaceship. I can't get Lieutenant Colonel S.C. I don't know. Where is Lieutenant Colonel? I thought I had... You bet, Tony. I thought I had a guest just like him, a guy... who claimed to be with the Earth Defense Force, who's been defending the Earth for years at the Mars base or wherever he's deployed to. I saw him, it popped up on Facebook, and then went researching for him. So, man, there's a guy that can replace the lieutenant. I got to get that guy. I'm still working on it. This guy's part of the Earth Defense Force. He's out there. Now, Jason may not believe it, but, you know, he's free to do what he does because we've got people up there defending us from them damn aliens. And they're coming down here. That's it. Well, people, appreciate you coming. We'll see you next week. Daniel Ott for the Edge. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Edge with Daniel Ott. To subscribe to The Edge newsletter, log on to theedgeam.com. That's theedgeam.com, where you can find out about our guests and topics discussed on the air. The Edge has been brought to you by EBN, the Edge Broadcasting Network, providing affordable live web streaming to the world. Visit EBN at ebnlive.net. That's ebnlive.net. Until next week, for The Edge Broadcast, I'm Chris Moore. See you on The Edge.